Welcome to HN Pod, the daily podcast where we dive into the top stories and the most fascinating common threads from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Tuesday, July 14th, 2026, and this is episode 456. We are looking back at the most interesting stuff that hit the front page yesterday, July 13th. We have got a really great lineup today. We are talking about the philosophy of software rewrites in the age of AI, some incredible benchmarks for Apple's newest speech recognition API, a couple of heavy-hitting stories about climate data, and sadly, we have to say goodbye to a cinema legend.
It is a packed show, so let us jump right into our first story. The title on Hacker News was Zig Creator Calls Spade a Spade, Anthropic Blows Smoke, and it racked up over 1,400 points. The article itself gets into the weeds of a project migrating from the Zig programming language to Rust, and whether a literal file-by-file migration to unsafe Rust actually minimizes risk or just throws away years of battle-tested code. But Mike, the comments section here turned into this incredible, deep philosophical debate about AI-generated code and the value of friction in software engineering.
It really did. A user named RetroTechie kicked it off by pointing out that the true value of a project is not in the code that gets produced, it's in the amount of battle testing that code has seen. They made the point that an existing Zig codebase has seen tons of real-world use, whereas a fresh Rust rewrite, even if it passes the test suites, has zero battle testing. And this naturally evolved into a conversation about why so many AI-generated projects are being abandoned within months of being created.
Right, and a user named Sphere had a brilliant take on this. They said these projects get abandoned because they are generated on a whim. They argue that the sunk cost fallacy can actually be a feature. If you spend blood, sweat, and tears on a project, you are way more likely to push through the inevitable adversity and the boring parts. But if all it took was a momentary idea and a quick prompt to an LLM to produce a working app, you have zero attachment to it. Ideas have always been cheap, but now proof of concepts are just as cheap.
That really resonated with me. Another user, Teriyaki Bomb, brought up the term vibe coding. They said that vibe-coded projects have this very specific feel to them where you can clearly see the creator locked the time to digest the idea. Because everything is so instant, the person does not challenge their own worst impulses. You end up with feature bloat, a lack of polish, and all these wild tangents that you normally would have talked yourself out of if you had to actually sit down and write the code manually.
But of course, this is Hacker News, so there was immediate pushback. A user named Mech998877 disagreed, saying friction itself does not add value. Only the time spent thinking about the problem adds value. They used the Wright brothers as an example, pointing out that they moved to the Outer Banks of North Carolina specifically to reduce friction. They wanted the best wind conditions and soft sand so they could crash with minimal damage and iterate as fast as possible.
I loved that historical analogy. But then someone else countered that the Wright brothers were reducing unnecessary friction, not all friction. If they had zero friction, they would just imagine a teleporter. The friction of the crashes was necessary feedback from reality. Someone even compared it to modern weight loss drugs. If your only goal is to lose weight, then learning to cook, portion control, and understanding macros feels like friction now that we have GLP-1 drugs. But if you just take the shortcut, you miss out on learning all those underlying useful skills.
It is such a perfect analogy for where we are with AI right now. If your only goal is to produce software, learning system design and project management feels like friction when you can just ask an AI to make it so. But those skills are what make the software actually robust and maintainable. It is a debate we are going to be having for the next decade, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Let's pivot to some tangible AI news. Our next story is titled Apple's New Speech Analyzer API, benchmarked against Whisper and its predecessor. This one got over 500 points. With iOS and macOS 26, Apple replaced their old speech recognition engine with a new speech analyzer API. But they did not publish any accuracy numbers. So the team at Inscribe, who build a private on-device AI workspace, decided to benchmark it themselves against OpenAI's Whisper models.
The results are honestly staggering. Apple's new built-in engine is now the most accurate on-device speech engine they tested for English. On clean speech, Apple's API had a word error rate of just 2.12%. For context, Whisper Small, which is a 460-megabyte model, had an error rate of 3.74%. So Apple is beating Whisper Small, and it is running about three times faster on an M2 Pro chip.
And compared to Apple's legacy API, it's a night and day difference. The old engine had a 9% error rate and struggled with punctuation. The new one is giving you perfectly cased, punctuated text. As the article points out, if you're a developer still using the old API, you need to migrate immediately, because an hour-long meeting transcribed with the old API will have 4 times as many wrong words.
It is a massive leap for on-device processing. The article notes that Whisper still has a huge advantage in language support, covering over 100 languages compared to Apple's roughly 30 locales. And obviously, Whisper runs on non-Apple hardware. But if you're building an English transcription app for the Mac or iPhone, the built-in tool is now the gold standard.
The Hacker News comments were super interesting on this one, especially regarding accents. A user from Australia mentioned that Apple's voice models have historically been terrible for them, forcing them to Americanize their voice to just be understood. Another user from Texas chimed in saying Siri still fails to understand them a quarter of the time. It brought up the classic Scottish elevator voice recognition comedy sketch, which someone linked in the thread. It's a hilarious reminder that word error rate on clean read speech does not always translate to regional dialects in a noisy car.
Totally. And the comments also highlighted how fast this space is moving. People brought up other state-of-the-art models like NVIDIA's Parakeet and Nemotron, as well as a brand new Chinese model called Moss Transcribe that is apparently excellent for Mandarin. But a bigger takeaway that someone mentioned is that this might be the end of the line for a lot of those paid wrapper apps that just put a user interface on top of Whisper. If Apple eventually builds a native voice recorder app using this new API, it's going to wipe out a lot of those indie vibe-coded projects we were just talking about.
That is a great connection. All right, let's shift gears to our third story, which takes us into climate science. The post is called A Graph That Should Be Front Page News, and it got over 600 points. The article is by Gregory Andrews, and it focuses on a graph showing sea surface temperatures in the Niño 3.4 region of the equatorial Pacific.
If you look at the graph, it is genuinely alarming. It shows the temperature for every year since 1982 as a blue line, and then the red line for this year, 2026, is completely detached from the rest of the cluster. It is not just a new record, it has departed entirely from the range of previous observations. The author points out that if this were a stock market chart or a medical test, it would be dominating global headlines, but instead, it is mostly met with silence.
The article does a great job explaining why this specific region matters. It is the beating heart of the Earth's climate system. Changes here drive the El Niño Southern Oscillation, which affects wind patterns, rainfall, and agriculture globally. And because human activities have increased atmospheric carbon dioxide, the oceans have absorbed 90% of that excess heat. So El Niño is no longer oscillating around a normal baseline. It is starting with substantially more heat already stored in the water.
But in true Hacker News fashion, the top comments immediately zeroed in on the statistical presentation of the data. A user named Alternator pointed out that while the current temperature is 4 standard deviations above the mean, there are historical lines from 1988 and 1989 that are 4 standard deviations below the mean. They questioned the variance calculation, asking how we could have multiple 3.5 sigma events in a data set that only goes back 40 years.
Right. A 3.5 sigma event should theoretically be a 1 in 1,000 chance. So if we are seeing 3 of them in 40 years, something is up. Another user replied that this suggests the data is no longer being randomly generated around a constant mean, but is instead drifting away from that mean. But then the debate shifted to whether the distribution has heavy tails, meaning extreme events are just naturally more common than a standard bell curve would predict.
There was also a healthy debate about cherry-picking data. Someone argued that picking a specific region on a specific day and only highlighting this year's data makes it easy to construct a dramatic narrative. But others pushed back hard, noting that this graph is just one of hundreds of signals telling the exact same story about ocean temperatures and climate destabilization. It is a classic Hacker News thread, where you get a masterclass in statistical analysis, but sometimes it feels like we are debating the math of the thermometer while the house is on fire.
That is a very fair point. And speaking of climate data, that leads perfectly into our fourth story. The headline is, Former NOAA Employees Built Climate.us to Preserve Climate Data and Resources, with nearly 500 points.
So, for some context, climate.gov used to host a massive amount of contextualized climate articles, data visualizations, and expert analysis. A group of former employees from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, have raised money through donations to stand up a new site called climate.us. They essentially backed up all the old articles and data to ensure it remains publicly accessible, and the funding will help them create new content going forward.
A commenter named I'm Overclocked asked a really practical question. They said, it is great that the historical data we all paid for was saved, but how will this site stay relevant? Turning current, real-time data into validated historical data takes significant resources. Someone replied that the raw data itself, petabytes of it, is actually still available through various government APIs. The real value of climate.us is not just raw storage, it is the articles that contextualize the data for the public.
What I found fascinating was the legal discussion in the comments about copyright and the public domain. Because this was produced by the US government, the data and articles are in the public domain by law. That is what made the migration to the new site legally possible. But someone noticed a weird quirk in the FAQ of the new site. It states that content prior to June 2025 is public domain and can be freely reused with proper attribution.
Yeah, a user named Thomas Yates caught that and said, wait, if it is in the public domain, why would you need attribution? That sparked a whole tangent about the Creative Commons Zero License, or CC0. Someone explained that CC0 was created specifically because some jurisdictions, like Germany, do not actually have a legal concept of dedicating something to the public domain. So CC0 acts as a universal waiver of rights. It is just so typical of this community to take a story about preserving critical climate infrastructure and turn it into a deep dive on international copyright law.
It really is. But it is also an important conversation about how we archive government services. A user named Self-Perfection asked if government websites should just be distributed and archived by default from the beginning, maybe using something like IPFS as the primary publishing target, with the normal web just acting as a mirror. It's an interesting technical solution to the political problem of data preservation.
Definitely something to think about. Finally today, we have to end on a sad note. Our last story is simply titled, Sam Neill Has Died. It linked to a Guardian obituary, and it had over 450 points. The legendary New Zealand actor passed away at the age of 78.
This one really hurts. He was such a massive part of the cultural landscape for anyone who grew up in the 90s. Obviously, everyone knows him as Dr. Alan Grant from Jurassic Park, but his career was so incredibly diverse. He was the romantic lead in The Piano, he was terrifying in Event Horizon, he was in The Hunt for Red October, and more recently, he was fantastic as Major Campbell in Peaky Blinders.
The article mentioned that he had been diagnosed with blood cancer a few years ago, specifically stage 3 angioimmunoblastic T-cell lymphoma, but his family released a statement saying his passing was sudden and unexpected, and that he was actually completely cancer-free at the time of his death.
The comments on Hacker News were just an outpouring of respect. So many people sharing how Jurassic Park inspired them to get into science or technology. He had this amazing ability to play these incredibly warm, intelligent characters, but he could also flip a switch and play some of the most charismatic villains on screen. He had over 150 credits across 5 decades. He was a true working actor, and by all accounts, just a wonderful, unselfish person. He will definitely be missed.
He absolutely will be. A true legend of the screen. And that is going to do it for today's episode of HN Pod. We covered a lot of ground today, from the philosophy of AI coding and Apple's impressive new speech API, to the realities of climate data and remembering a cinematic icon.
As always, you can find links to all the articles and the Hacker News discussion threads in our show notes. If you enjoyed the conversation, please share the podcast with a friend or leave us a review. It really helps the show grow.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us today. I am Mike.
And I am Sarah. We will be back tomorrow to break down the next batch of top stories. Have a great day, everyone.